This is Alan Chainsaw Kessler, and you're listening to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast.
The heart and soul of poker has always been the fact that it's a social game.
Who doesn't remember sitting around the kitchen table with their buddies in high school, drinking soda, playing for nickels, dimes, and quarters?
Back before everyone had a computer in their pocket, do you remember how difficult it used to be to keep track of organizing your home game?
Now, running a home game with your friends is easier than ever before, using the new one-of-a-kind OOAK iOS poker app.
As a home game host, you'll love all the OOAK features that help you keep track of it all.
The one-of-a-kind app provides you with the number of chips of each denomination needed to create the desired starting stack, and it also keeps track of tournament blind levels.
Whether you are playing cash games or tournaments, this app will allow you to start your games effortlessly, cutting down on setup time and getting the action going as quickly as possible.
For more information, visit OOAK.poker and follow them on Twitter at OOAKpoker.
Be sure to download the one-of-a-kind poker app from the App Store today.
Welcome to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, bringing you tales, tips, discussions, and great interviews, led by two veterans of the poker home game scene. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Robbie and Bruce.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us, whether you're a new listener or you're just coming back for some more after 257 wonderful episodes. In this show, we read an email from a listener who's offered an additional way in which busy folks can enjoy our podcast content. We also announced the next giveaway for two uncut sheets of J-Design cards, and we're excited to have a very special guest, Ronnie Barta, professional poker player and WSOP bracelet winner with an enviable main event cash history. Our one-outer today comes from a previous contest winner who reflects on his home game reputation. Let's get going.
Hey, how you running? Beats, suckouts, triumphs, and tragedies from last week's home game play.
Hey, Robbie. How are you running?
I've been running well, Bruce. I gotta tell you, on our last episode, I reported to you, the great pizza investment. When I got my home game buddies, I bought the beer, bought the pizza, and I ended up, thanking them for paying for the beer and the pizza and leaving me a little bit extra in the wallet. And the good run continues, and it is a great feeling to be saying that I'm running well. Yeah, a couple good games in a row. Heroic victory I eked out at my dad's table, which was really wonderful. I had a great time with them, of course, as I always do. And it was just nice, you know, like for the first, I guess, 3-4 hours of the session, I was, you know, I'd say up and down. And I wouldn't call it upstuck so much. I was up, you know, at some point, maybe, I don't know, 50, 60 bucks. And then it kept getting knocked down to, you know, more or less my starting stack and then a little bit below and then build it up again, $50, $60 mark, you know, that sort of thing. And then I had to end up buying in a little bit more because I got felted. And then from there till the end of the night, I sort of took off and it was pretty great. Ended up with a little over $100 profit. But, you know, considering when you're playing at 25 cent, 50 cent stake, that's pretty darn nice.
Yeah, excellent. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Good job.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. Good feeling. And one of the other good runs we're having is actually right here on Top Pair. You know, we got a new sponsor. So, yay. This is wonderful.
Great job.
That's for both of us. It's a great feeling. And, want to, you know, just extend our thanks to, the one of a kind poker app. That's not a descriptive term for the app. That's actually the name of the app. One of a kind. You could find it, on iOS, on all your Apple devices. And, what this app does, it's a great fit for here at Top Pair. It basically helps you do all of the organizational aspects of a home game. Right? It's pretty cool. Like, you know, how many chips you need for your starting stack, what the denominations are. So, like, think about it. When you start your home game, you know, hosts especially, you know this, there's so much time and effort that goes into it and counting this out and, you know, all the, you know, the little nitty gritty logistics of all this other sort of stuff. And this app basically takes care of all of it for you. Think about it. You usually spend like, you know, a good 15 minutes or so, 20 minutes setting up. This really just cuts down the time. You got your timer ready if it's a tournament. all of that data that you just sort of like look at it, take a glance, and it's there for anyone else to go ahead and use. One of a kind poker app, and then, you know, you just get to start playing. You know, forget all of the surrounding stuff. You really want to just go ahead and play cards. So, you know, it seems like a pretty darn good fit. I will say I haven't been able to see it and try it yet because I don't have an iOS phone. I've got an Android device. But, you know, I did check out the website. And it's pretty darn sleek. It looks really, really nice. And, you know, it seems like a great app.
Yeah, no, I think it, like you say, it's targeted towards the home game poker audience, which is obviously our audience, too. So I agree with you. You know, I've hosted games for years and years and years, and you do spend a lot of time, and you're always wondering, well, okay, if I only want this to run X amount of hours, how many chips should I start out with, and what should my blinds be, and how quick should I raise them, and then keeping track of those blind levels, keeping track of the chips, keeping ongoing counts. There's just a dozen of things you have to worry about as a host, and it does take your focus away from having fun and playing. So this is great. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Sure. So everyone go ahead and, you know, be sure to visit, I think it's OOAK.poker. That's the website. And, you know, go ahead on the App Store if you've got an iOS device and download that app. You know, thank our sponsor. We're very, very happy to have them aboard. And let us know what you think of the app. You know, go ahead and look for us on Facebook at the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast. And on Twitter, of course, we're at Top Pair. We'd love to know what you think of the app and of our show.
Yeah, of course, you can always send us an email at feedback@toppair.net. And we do love to hear from you. So.
Cool. Well, speaking of email, I think you've got an email to share with us, Bruce. Isn't that right?
We do have an email. Came from Josh, and it was a really good one. We appreciate him reaching out. He says, I've been a lifelong poker player since 2004, mainly being an online player, and I'm a fan of your home game podcast. There's so much misinformation and poor coverage of our industry that I appreciate anyone who puts a lot of effort into making something of quality. Home games are also a niche that gets ignored in the media, but takes place in millions of homes, so I think it's great that you guys focus on that. I actually had your latest show on Maryland and the Poker Start, that Maryland law we talked about, and Poker Stars coming to New Jersey transcribed, which I think might help people to find what you're talking about through searches, or when they can't always listen to the audio. I know that happens to me when I've got a sleeping toddler nearby, and I don't have my headphones. And he asks if we'd like him to send it over to us. Just let us know and keep up the good work. And that's from Josh. So, again, we definitely appreciate that, Josh.
Those are some really sweet words. Thanks so much for the kind words, Josh. And, yeah, actually, I had emailed back and forth with him, and he will be sending that transcript, and hopefully I'll be able to put it up on my blog, on the Card Player Lifestyle Poker blog. So you guys can, you know, for those of you who don't have time to listen to the whole 45, 50 minute show or so, you know, be able to have a transcript for everybody to enjoy.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. We appreciate you doing that. That's a lot of work. You must have a good program that can do that. So
how you been running outside of that, Bruce?
Well, you know, I've been running good too. I've been kind of just grinding it out, but grinded a couple of pretty good wins. Nothing to quit my day job, so to speak. but been doing good. But you know, I was thinking I had a pretty good mixed game last night. Actually, it was hosted by Jeff, our engineer and producer.
Hi, Jeff.
And this has occurred to me a couple of times before, and I don't know if it's just because I've got selective memory or I notice it more or whatever, but it seems like my pattern is I always get either good cards or I hit a flop really good when I'm in early position. You know, they say position is vital in poker and, you know, your last act, and you get to see what people are doing before you get all sorts of clues and things you can pick up. Mm-hmm. I really notice it when I come up with a really solid starting hand, but I'm in the, you know, in early position, so I'm the first one, you know, under the gun to act. Or after the flop, if I'm in the small blind or the big blind, and I just kill the flop on the cards I've been playing. But I'm always in early position, and it's like, okay, I'm got to make some money because I just killed that flop.
Right.
But what do I do? You know, do I go out there right now and scare other people off? You know, do I go out there right now and get re-raised and end up playing, you know, big money, even though I think I'm pretty solid with the hand I've got, or what do I do? So. Just an observation, nothing you can do about it other than being aware of it. I guess I'm proud of myself for being aware of it.
That's the first step.
But it just,
yeah.
it's really weird how it seems like every time I get a good hand, I'm in early position and I'm faced with how to handle it in that position.
Hmm. So. Interesting.
So yeah, I mean, just things that make you say home. Nothing big deal. So. Hey, wanted to let everybody know that our good friend Jason at J Design is still in the giving mood, so to speak. It has worked out so well in the last contest. We've had this sheet of uncut cards that people are anxious to get and frame and put in their poker room, and so he's authorized us to give out another couple of sheets here in the next few episodes. So we wanted to start a new one. And again, it seems to have worked well just to have it a very simple process to get it. And we're coming up on April Fool's Day. In fact, one of my favorite shows that I did with Eric, if everybody wants to go back into our archive, I think it was the very first April 1st show that Eric and I did together, but we did a total spoof show of just weird, strange stories and outlandish things that you'd listen to and went, I can't believe that really happened, but it was a fun show to do. So anyway, in the spirit of that and in the spirit of the time of year, just send us a message, just April Fools. You know, you can send us at feedback@toppair.net on the email and just, hey, Top Pair, April Fools.
Of course, and on social media as well. We're always monitoring our Facebook page. Just look for the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast and on Twitter as well, @TopPair.
So very simple, April Fools. We'll be running this over the next two or three shows, but, get it in early and we'll just put you in a random drawing for those, uncut sheets of J Design.
Sure. And I'll just also say, you mentioned looking back into the archives. We've got 257 episodes of archives. So when you have nothing to do, whether it's April 1st or any other day of the week, by all means, go ahead and look into those archives. A lot of great home game poker, podcast content for you to enjoy.
For sure. Yeah, I look back and go, wow, where did the time go and where did I get all those ideas? Well, we've got a very special guest that's biding his time in the green room. After these messages from our sponsors, we'll bring him front and center. Are you hosting a home poker game but don't have the space for a dedicated poker table?
Have you tried playing on the kitchen or dining table only to have cards fly off and the chip stacks crumble?
The Poker Hoodie Snug Fit Game Surface and Table Pad is the perfect solution. Play like the pros wherever you go.
The smooth, padded gaming surface of the Poker Hoodie will instantly convert your dining, kitchen, or patio table into a poker table and take your game to the next level.
Cards are easy to pick up and glide smoothly. Chips bounce gently and are easy to control. Plus, spills are cleaned up with no fuss.
Soft and pliable neoprene conforms to your table's unique surface, and the flexible tightening system ensures a snug fit.
The logo carry bag neatly stores your poker hoodie and allows you to take your game on the road.
Art graphics are easily applied, so you can add your favorite logo or team mascot. It's a great idea if you're planning a poker club or a charity event and want to showcase the main sponsors.
Visit PokerHoodie.com for all the details, or click the link on the Top Pair homepage.
Poker Hoodie looks forward to seeing you at your next home game.
Seat open, table one.
Hey, wait a sec. I know this guy. He sat on my left yesterday. Ah, I wish I remember how he played.
You should have taken notes.
Oh, come on. I'm not bringing a notebook to the table. I look like a fish.
You don't have to. There's an app for that. Poker Notes Live. Notice a tell? Want to keep track of your live poker sessions? Use the Poker Notes Live app to tag and classify your opponents. Record your wins and losses and improve your overall performance at the poker table. Poker Notes Live. Get it now on Google Play and the App Store. Don't ante up without it. Brought to you by CardPlayerLifestyle.com.
Hey, look who we found hanging around. Let's get a mic for him and see what he has to say.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast. Look who we found hanging around. What a great guy, Ronnie Barta. A lot of people, a lot of our listeners, big fans of poker. I'm sure you've seen him on the World Series of Poker over the last many years. And there's plenty more that we could talk about, and it'll come out in the questions and of course, him talking about himself. But let's let Ronnie, first of all, Ronnie, thank you very much for joining us here at Top Pair.
No problem. It's a pleasure. I appreciate you guys having me. I'm always, down to speak about the game and get the game out there as much as possible. And it's, it's great to do work with great guys like yourself, you know.
Well, sure. Great. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
What you're saying, that sounds like a true professional poker player. But, a lot of people are not necessarily as familiar with you as we are. Why don't you introduce yourself a little bit and end off the introduction with how did you get into poker in the first place?
Okay, my name's Ronnie Barta. I was born and raised in Brockton, Massachusetts. It's like a pretty nitty-gritty, city. It's got about 120,000 people south of Boston, been playing professionally for about 12 years. Basically how I got into poker, my dad was a pretty crazy gambler. He was in and out of the casinos all the time, in and out of dog tracks, scratch tickets, betting sports, doing all that. I know we can talk about this later, but make a long story short, basically I got a fake ID and stopped playing in the pits with him. He played a little poker also. I was about 17 years old playing blackjack, playing Caribbean stud, not putting the dollar up for the bonus, so if, just in case I hit a straight flush, I wouldn't get kicked out. doing stuff like that. I had a fake ID, but when you win at 30,000, 40,000 or 250,000, they might look further into it. So doing all that, and then I just picked up poker, realized that the pits were no good around 20, 21 years old. I learned early, and was making money playing cards, and then I just was working part time, going to school part time, playing part time, and then just poker eclipsed both, and I just dropped out of college and stopped working, and then I never looked back.
Now, it says you, in one of the bios we read online, that you actually started playing in some home games with some friends and that when you were about 12 years old. How did that work out with, I guess, probably just nickel-dime games type of thing, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say – I don't know what bio you read about me being 12th in a home game.
Ivy League. That's where we got it from.
Oh, Ivy League said that? Well, I was playing the 12th, 13th. I was playing five-card draw with, my babysitters. You know what I mean? I knew the strength of the hands. I knew hand strength, what beat what, and, with the draw. And I was playing a lot of five-card draw. You can drop to four. That's what our rule was. And right. One time, and then we'd bet again. But we played for food. Usually it was for almonds or different types of nuts. And sometimes we had coins, but it was never. And then when I later around 18, 19, I started playing basement games. 2002 and 2001, we played $5 a person, and then we all got 10,000 chips, and the blinds went up every 15 minutes. We started doing that for a while. Yeah. I was playing in the basement. Before I took my game to Foxwoods Casino, I started playing 1-2-0 limit. I was playing tons of sitting goes in my basement. And then I just took my game. We went to the casino once in a while with friends. And all of a sudden, I started making solo trips by myself,
Wait, yeah. So you obviously started before the moneymaker boom. This is I guess Rounders was your influence or something else or just –
It was my dad. It was him being such a big gambler, and it wasn't a good thing for my dad, thankfully my dad doesn't listen to any of these podcasts because he'd get really upset at me for spilling his business like that. But he was a really bad gambler. Most Israelis are fucking terrible gamblers. From Israel, they just blow their balls. They just go and they just play all these games, and he just loves to gamble. He just scratched from everything. And he just had a lot of leaks, and just a lot of, vices. He just didn't, he wasn't, and he's not a good poker player. He's one of the worst.
So you didn't learn from him. You just learned about, poker in the first place.
Exactly. I learned poker. He used to yell at me when I used to be underage. He'd play stud primarily. So I used to be at his 1-5 stud table. He played 1-5 stud, half dollar ante. And I would sit down with him and he would just intimidate me and tell me to get the hell out of him. He would just yell at me, excuse me. He would just yell at me and tell me and make me nervous. And I was 19, 18, get away. You don't know what you're doing. Go play blackjack. Get out of here. Embarrass me in front of all these people. And that's kind of shook me up a few times. So I stayed away from poker for a little while until I stopped playing with my friends, Cause my dad was a little hard on me and everything I did, always telling me you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong, So.
Well, obviously it worked out well for you. One of your obviously claims to fame is the amount of consecutive cashes you had in the WSOP and the main event. Looks like you won a bracelet back in 2012. I think that was in No Limit Hold'em, right?
No, it was Limit.
Yeah, right. Limit. Six-handed Limit.
Six Max Limit Hold'em, yeah. That was probably, you know, winning that bracelet. And it's close because, you know, everybody has a bracelet. I mean, not everybody. You know, there are many people out there that have bracelets. But I don't – nobody else has my record. It's like my own little record that I – kind of like, there's so many people tied for four. There's like seven of us that had four in a row.
Right.
And then me and Harder were a chance to make five, and I did it, and he didn't cash, you know.
Christian Harder, yeah?
Yeah, Christian Harder, great kid from Maryland, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we'll be seeing him in a month or so in Maryland playing some tournament there. Mm-hmm. But anyways, it was my own record. They asked me, it was more like, you know, it was more of like, you know, an accomplishment, it meant more to me, and I just told them probably the five cashes. If I was to win a second bracelet, I think it would be bracelet number two, for sure.
Being the most, the biggest accomplishment for you.
Yeah, because once you get bracelet number two, you're in that special league for multiple bracelet winners, because, like, there's a lot of people that just, like, win a bracelet. Like, you just, you know, when I won a bracelet, people knew who I was already, because I had that big score in 2010 in the main. I've been a pretty consistent grinder on the scene since 2003, 2004 on the live scene playing cash. Like, I knew all the big timers. Like, they all knew who I was, and they all knew I was waiting for my big break. And then so I won. It was like, oh, Ronnie Barta finally won a tournament. You know, like, he won a bracelet. Good for him. But a lot of players, like, people just, like, who work 9 to 5, who come into the series, like, a lot of these guys will book a week to the they take, like, a week off of work. They have it on their calendar. Sorry, my throat is... pretty good. I just ran about 4 miles, so I'm coughing up opens of shit. They'll have it on their calendar, like the World Series of Poker. I'm coming out there. They just plan it. They have like 6 days they're going out. They plan. They're playing two events. You know, they got the babysitter. They just plan.
Right.
And then they come out and they just win a bracelet. It's just like amazing. So that happens. You know, you hear the stories all the time.
You know, I hope to be one of those stories myself someday.
So what you're saying is the second bracelet is the validation that, you know, people don't, even though it wasn't just a fluke for you, that, you know, you can definitely kind of put that to rest that, hey, I've got two bracelets. So it wasn't just one of those happened to be lucky one time type of thing.
Exactly. I mean, the next year in 2013, I was five handed in the 5K limit hold'em, and I was chip leader, and then three handed, I was second in chips. And then I played three handed. I just played pretty fucking poorly. I was ramming and jamming. I just played too aggressive. I lost my head a little, and I finished third. So I had a really good chance of winning a second place of the next year, which would have been pretty cool to go back to back. And a limit hold'em championship would have been great, because I do play lots of limit hold'em cash, and, you know.
Right. Well, you say you've been, obviously, you know, everyone knows you've been grinding. You know, you look at the Hendon mob, you have cashes dated, you know, all the way back to 2004, you know, but we've been talking up until now about, you know, specifically your experience and successes at the World Series. I guess, you know, you've obviously done some traveling around, you know, aside from the, you know, the big summer series. Where are your favorite places to play, I guess, in the United States and then anywhere else around the world?
I would say United States. You know, I lived in Florida for 4 years before moving to Vegas. I might move back. I'm not even sure. I really enjoy playing in Miami, at the Hard Rock, but I guess I'm just used to the Northeast, you know, type of crowd. The people in Miami are kind of like, you know, flaky and just like, kind of like, you know, pretentious and kind of just all about pretty self. I don't know. Their humor is a little different. Anyways, besides that, playing poker down there is great in the atmosphere. The beaches are nice. The tournaments are really soft. It's a great place to play. I would say my favorite place, though, to play, I don't know, in the States. California is cool, but again, it's the commerce is like a big dungeon. It's like everybody's yelling at, it's like a lot of action. Everybody's yelling at each other. I really like Park's poker room in Philly.
Yeah.
I really like that room. Cool. It's pretty cool. I just like the people, and I have a lot of friends there. You know, and I like that area. I like Philly and South Jersey for some. I like that. I just like the area. It's nice. And I would say
and outside of the States, yeah.
Outside of the States, I would say Aruba, 100%. Yeah, Aruba's my favorite place. Yeah.
How could you not like that?
Yeah, I would say playing. I'm the pro for their tour. Like the ambassador of their tour, PPC Professional Poker Players Championship. And they run tournaments all year round in the States. But 20% of their price pool, their main events are like $350 and $500, usually $350s. But they get these huge fields, and they take 20% of that price pool and put it toward packages to go to Aruba to play the main.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, so they have like 16 to 20 stops in the States. They have a lot of stops in the States. Like, they got pretty big. And it's like a, it's like smaller than mid-stakes poker tour. It's like a little small. But we can call it a low-stakes kind of like grinder. Like, it's pretty good. But then their main event is in Aruba, and it's this year it's a $2,500 500K. And,
nice.
You know, it's pretty, pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got guys satelliting in from like $300 tournaments, and now they're playing a main, and first place is going to be over $150,000 this year. And it's in November. It's just, it's a great time. It's a good time.
Oh, cool.
So I would say Aruba. Aruba's definitely my favorite place. And I would say also probably Barcelona.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Well, it looks like you broke your main event streak last year with the 5 years in a row, but it still remains the record. But looking again on online and doing some research, you had three caches in the WSOP last year. What events did you cash in last summer?
I came in on fire. I remember my first event was a Colossus. I went pretty deep. I took two brutal beats, and I finished like 1,100 out of what, you know, like 20-something thousand people they had. And then my friend calls me and says, hey, Planet Hollywood has like a similar tournament they're running to, like, that's called the Goliath, you know, like their version. Mm-hmm, and they got, it was a $500 buy-in, they got 2,500 people. I took third for 77,000 on that. That wasn't a World Series event. And then I came back, played the Millie Maker, like the next event. I went pretty deep. Right. I took like 300 plays. I kind of made a bad play. I mean, I had a flush draw, got it in and bricked out. I didn't have any over. I thought I had a couple overs also, but I had King Jack of Hearts versus the two kings on the 10 deuce, 7-2 heartboard and bricked out for a huge pot where I was like, pretty much, you know, I didn't have to go there to do that. And then I played the six-handed event that I actually won in 2012, and I took like 16,000 out of cash. But like, I don't play too many, I literally play probably on average every year since 2010, like 9-8 events.
Per year, that's it.
That's it. And like the year I won a bracelet, the year I won a bracelet, I played six events. I cashed in the main and won a bracelet and didn't do anything other four. I was 2 for 6, bracelet and like a deep cash. The year I played the main event in 2010, that was the only event I played. Like some 2011, I played the most events, was 12 events. Because those were right after my winning 300,000. I primarily play cash. I have like 74 caches on Hendon Mob, but like if you compare me to like a Matt Stout, to an Aaron Massey, to a, you know, Jake Baisley, to these grinders that play all these tournaments, I literally play like probably 10 to 15% of their volume.
Right. Like, and it's a high percentage of cashing, I guess.
I do cash in a lot of tournaments. I probably should play more, but I like the balance. Like, I can't take like a full schedule of tournaments. I lose my mind, man. I lose my mind.
Well, it's interesting. Like the tournaments, at least, you know, from how I've become aware of you and a lot of poker fans and stuff, it's these gigantic fields of like thousands and thousands of people. Do you prefer those to smaller, like a couple hundred fields, or you know, it doesn't make a difference to you?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I love the huge fields. One, you get a lot more amateurs. You get a lot more. It's way softer. I mean, that's just the reality of it. If you get 6,000 people, there's no way, you know, like 70% of that field are not good. Let's be real. And then you get 20% who are just like average and decent. And then the top 10%, you like 600 players are like really good. And then like 100 world class. And then you got like 20 or 30 of the aliens that are just like super good. You know what I mean? So like, when you have like bigger numbers, you're able to maneuver the field. You're able to pick your opponents well. When you're playing a World Poker Tour, a $3,500 event in like, you know, like Jacksonville, which is still pretty good, but you got like 400 players, literally 200 know what they're doing, like more than half. And then cream rises. So when you get down to like 50 players, you're looking at like 30 of the best are still in, like really, really good players. It's really hard. Like even the main event, you get down to three tables, you know, 75% of them, 80% of them are good. But then you get like those five or six that for some reason, nobody has no idea how they're still down on day six. That are still, but that makes the tournament still pretty good, because that's all you need is two per table, you know, or one per table.
Well, this is something, I'll just play devil's advocate then. Like, this is something that, you know, wouldn't, matter as much to, let's say, you know, a home game or a recreational player, cause, you know, like you said, you know, you'll just take a week off and it's like a life experience kind of thing. But the devil's advocate of, like, these big fields is, you know, you could clearly play for, like, 3 full days of, like, 12 hours each in the World Series or something and not make the money. So, like, a lot of pros are like, well, you know, it's just not worth it. It's just, you know, or just barely make the money and, you know, it's, your hourly rate gets decimated because of it. Is that something that goes through your mind when you decide whether to play or not?
You know, like, the main event, you can never miss that event. Like, I missed it. Well, I missed it. Yeah, but like, yeah, other 10Ks, like, I was just at Commerce. I wish I did play it because I actually blew more playing cash, but I was just at Commerce. I just, if I'm not feeling well or, you know, just like, I have to be running really well playing cash and I have to be feeling well. There's have to be a lot of different variables that add up for me to play a big tournament. You know, mm-hmm. I can sell action. I sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Yeah, of course. It gets frustrating when you get so deep and you play for 2 days and you don't cash. There's so much variance in tournament hold and poker tournaments. It's just, it can, people go on, like, I know tournament grinders are going 200K downswings that don't cash, like, after 4 or 5 months of playing these 10Ks and 3500s, and they're just in buried in makeup, and they're just like, you know, they just, it gets to them. Like, yeah, that definitely plays a part of it. You know, like, you know, you min cash and you only make an six, 7,000 after 4 days, and then you only have 40% of yourself and you have to piece out all these guys. That's, you know, you literally, so you have to, most of these tournaments, you have to final table and finish like top six to make any real money. And it's really hard. Mm-hmm. Really hard.
So when you play the cash games, do you still kind of have a fondness and preference for playing at a limit, or do you play no limit, or what's your preference there?
If I find good limit hold'em games, I'd rather play limit hold'em. I love no limit hold'em. Like, when I was living in Miami, there isn't any limit hold'em there, so I had to play no limit. So I played no limit every day for 3-4 years. But when I first started playing poker, I learned playing no limit, 1-2 and 2-5. Then I started playing 20-40 hold'em for like a couple of years. And then I went to no limit for like a year and a half, and I was like actually back and forth, but I played a lot of 5-10 no limit. And then when I moved to Miami, I literally played 5-10 and 10-20 no limit every, you know, 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. So coming back to Vegas, it's nice. I can play both again. I'm on a pretty big downswing right now. I'm in like a, you know, like, you know, for me, it's pretty big, like 30K downswing in the last like 3 weeks. So I'm taking like 4 days off and, you know, getting my head right. I've been running really bad also. I'm being a little hard on myself. I've been running pretty fucking terrible. So,
well, sometimes it's good to, you know, take that step away from the game and, you know, talk poker, like on the Top Pair Home Game Poker podcast, and, you know, get your brain realigned and hopefully come back with a lot more vengeance there.
For sure.
So, well, do you play anything besides hold'em? How about PLO or any other mixed games?
I like playing the horse games. I can play PLO. I'm not that great. You know, at PLO, I'm a super knit, you know, I mean, that's some games all you have to do is just knit, nut pedal and just sit there and knit sweaters and not, you know, just get in with like, you know, top sets and like nut flush draws and wraps. But I'm not that good. I wouldn't stand well in like a PLO game with like, you know, really good players. So I just, if I'm playing PLO, somebody's like, dude, that game right there, nobody knows what they're doing. Go sit down. So I'll do that. But I like playing, Stud 8. I like playing Omaha 8. I like playing, you know, all the limit games. I'm trying to get better at the draw games, like Badoogie, Badesi, you know, deuce to seven triple draw, like, you know, ace low ball, you know, ace to five, all those, you know, they have like super stud and all that. I'm trying to learn those games because that's where the money is right now.
Right.
But like in Vegas, there's a there's a $9, $18 game, which is a decent limit to learn at, but they play 15 stupid games. Where only like five, yeah, they play all these weird games. So only like 5 or 6 of them is what you really want to play, but it takes 5 hours to get through a rotation.
Uh-huh. That's good practice for the Dealer's Choice event, I guess, at the World Series.
That's about it. For the Dealer's Choice event, yeah. But like the games that I want to play, like the 40-80 game at the Bellagio and the 80-160 game, it's a little, like 40-80 is still, it's like the game, it's the limit that I like playing, hold'em, and like, you know, stud 8 and stuff. But it's too big to learn at. Like, you take 3-4K swings. I'm not trying to, like, learn at that limit. Even, like, 9-18, it's still big enough where, like, you can lose 1,000, win 1,000. So you try, but it's not, like, it's not going to hurt the pockets as much. You know what I'm saying? So.
Right.
I wish they just had, like, a 5 or 6 game mix of 9-18 or 10-20 where it was, you know, Badoosie, Badesi, deuce to 7 triple draw, you know, super stud and, like, you know, whatever, you know.
Well, as home game advocates, both Robbie and I are real fans of mixed games or dealer's choice games, because it, you know, it breaks up the flow of things. To go back to kind of what you were saying too, it's you get a lot of people that are a lot less comfortable or proficient in some of the mixed games. So, you know, if you've played a lot of them and kind of got a comfort level with them, your odds are better. So, it's funny, you know, when you talk about the draw games and the Bedusi and the Bedesi, you know, I will often call Bedusi in the mixed game, and people will look at me like I'm just pulling this out of my ass and making it up, and I'm like, no, it's really a legitimate game that a lot of the pros are getting into that are in the mixes and that, and they like, that sounds like Bedusi. What you just that's a crap. You never find that anyplace. That's the only place in the whole Western United States that you're playing that.
That's true. They play it in Commerce also, and they also play it in they're spreading it at the Borgata. Mm-hmm. You know, they play at a Borgata. You know, they have the draw games at Borgata. But there's not too many places that spread those games, correct? Yeah. They had it in Florida at Coconut Creek. They were playing a 300-600 game. A little too big for me. They're playing 300-600, wow, like, mix. But, yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to learn those mix. I like playing other games, you know. But, you know, it's tough to leave a game where you're really good at, like, a limit hold'em game or no limit hold'em. That you right. sit down and usually, you know, 75% of the time. Now, not recently, but usually, like, my win, you know, is 70%, 75% I'm winning, so.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, you said you're in the little, taking a little bit of a break, a few days off. Let's talk about something away from the table. I've done, a good bit of research here, and, you know, Muay Thai, and apparently you're a talented beatboxer. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, little Ronnie Barta away from the table?
Yeah, I love Muay Thai. I've been to Thailand 4 times, and when I go, I stay at a camp where it's like, you know, just Muay Thai, like heaven. It's just like, just all, you're just basically training twice a day. You're getting massages that are geared toward Muay Thai fighting, where they rub these wood on you. They just like iron out your shins. You're bruised on your shins with wood. You cry. You're just taking ice baths. You're on this tropical beach and you're just hanging out with other fighters. And it's just amazing, man. So it's like, I recommend it to anybody at any fitness level. Just to do it for, like, if you go out there for 2-3 weeks, I would recommend a month, you know, but it's just like, so you see some, like, you see, you know, a difference in your body, but it's just like, man, it's just so, I'm so passionate. I love it, man.
And then, how'd you get into it in the first place?
You know, I just always want to do some kind of self-defense, type thing, like, you know, and I just like kick, but I have long legs, so I like to kick. And Sorel Mizzi was actually talking about in 2008 and 9 that he wanted to go out there. We're supposed to go together. We never linked up and I went all by myself. Now, actually, me and Sorel work out a little because he lives in Vegas. We'll hit the gym a little once in a while. And, like, I sparred before his fight with Brian Rast. Like, I sparred with him to try to get him ready for that. You know, and he actually, you know, like, he beat the shit out of me. You know, he's like, he has a little longer reach. He's like an inch taller. And he was training up to it. So I was like, I haven't trained in like 3-4 months. So I just jumped in the ring with him. And it's a lot of conditioning. You know, like, fighting is very tiring. You know, I'm pretty sure, you know, if I was conditioned and I trained for 3-4 months, I'd whip his ass, you know, but, he had me a few times in the sparring and I had to stop a couple times. He whacked me a couple times good, but you know, he beat the shit out of Rast. I don't know if you guys seen that.
I didn't see it yet.
You should see that. It's pretty, it's like, whoa. But, anyhow, yeah. And beatboxing, like, I've been doing it since I was a kid. You know, I'm all right. You know, I'm definitely the best poker player beatboxer. But, like, if you compare me to some of these animals out there, I'm just, like, a novice, you know. I'm all right, you know. Like, and like, to be honest, like, when people ask me to do it over and over, not that it's annoying, that's cool, but I just feel bad because I feel like they're giving me too much credit. Like, oh, man, you're the best. And I'm like, actually, I'm all right. I'm not that – I'm, like, good. You know, I'm like, when people hear it, they're like, oh, shit, that's pretty awesome. And it is, you know. I'm, like, I'm not downplaying my talents or anything like that. But, like, on a – if I was in the beatboxing world, I would be like, you know, like there, I would be like a C-level, like, you know, beatboxer, you know, C+.
A mid-stakes grinder.
I would be like, you know, I'd be winning at 1-2 no limit, you know. I would, you know what I'm saying? I couldn't beat the bigger games, you know, with my skills, so.
Yep.
That's interesting. Well, getting back to poker, what do you see as far as any future goals that you might have for yourself in poker? I know you mentioned a goal of getting a second a bracelet to, you know, kind of legitimize that. Is there any things that you see on the horizon that you're like, boy, I'd like to do that, or I'd like to accomplish that, or I'd like to reach that?
I'd like to get out a little more. Like, as far as marketing, I'm the worst at it, marketing myself, you know, like getting on certain TV shows. Like, I did good. I was on Shark Cage. That was cool. And, you know, I've been on ESPN a bunch, and, but I feel like I could have applied myself a little more into, like, you know, doing things that, you know, just make a little more money behind the scenes. If I was training players or doing my own thing, or, you know, pushing myself towards maybe some reality TV, that would be pretty cool. You know, mm-hmm. I see a lot of poker players getting on Survivor or doing this or getting on this show, or, you know what I mean? I think I have the personality and the charisma and the look to get on these things, but I just don't, you know, maybe I should get a manager. That's something I'm looking towards maybe doing. You know, I'm in Vegas now, but I'm probably going to live out in LA pretty soon. So, you know, that's a lot of things are happening in LA. Mm-hmm. Goal as a poker player, just in the game itself, I'd like to just consistently still win. You know, I'm in Vegas now because I'm out here just trying to get a condo for me and my dad or a house. Mm-hmm. And once I get moved out here and get that all situated, I'm going to probably either move to LA or Denver, because mm-hmm. I like the outdoors and stuff. So, and just
not much is there poker in Denver?
Yeah, there really? Is. There's this really, really good 30-60 hold'em game with a half kill that goes to 50-100, and sometimes they play 50-100, and it's not big enough where you're going to get all these top professional limit hold'em players. You know, like, a lot of the big names who wanna play bigger games, you know, so it's just a perfect level where if I was to live in Denver and travel, like, when I come home, I can play this 30-60 that goes to 50-100 once in a while, which potentially if I was to grind 30 hours a week, I can make over 120K a year. And then they have tournaments there. They get the HPT. It's one of their biggest events in Blackhawk. Then they get the MSPT. It's a huge event also. It's a 1K they get. That gets a lot of players, and I love Denver. It's just a really, really nice place to like Boulder and Denver. That whole area is really cool and, like, really, you know, clean and a lot of good people, and, you know, I like it. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I like traveling. I like going up there at least 3 times a year, anyways, to play and hang out. So,
Well, Ronnie, you know, we put together all these questions and stuff. I only really have one left, and you know, I sort of want to ask you this, you know. People know who Ronnie Barta is. You know, you've been on ESPN, you've been on Poker News, you know, all the big poker outlets, you know, have given you plenty of exposure. And even the Top Pair Home Game Poker podcast has had you on, you know? That's pretty impressive.
Thanks a lot, yeah.
There you go.
So I hope this podcast keep blowing up more and more and more.
For sure. Know? So with all that exposure, you know, and, you know, you look back and you've been playing poker, I guess, for about 15 years now. You know, do you ever miss the beginning? Do you ever romanticize about those home games that you used to play, or maybe say, oh, I'd love to go play in a home game again now, you know, even though you're a big, you know, big time pro?
Yeah, I mean, like, home games, you know, there's always, like, different things you have to watch out for. You know, one is, like, you know, people cheating, or it's not even the cheating, it's a game getting robbed or getting raided by police, or just suspect shit, or just, like, stupid rules where, like, you have to stay in the game a certain amount of hours, or, you know, if you beat a fish up too bad, you're gonna let them win once in a while, you know, take it easy on them. Like, I play in games where, like, you know, some gangster ass games in South Boston where, like, I called this gangster with ace high and he got pretty mad about it, you know. I played in games where people were carrying guns and shit, you know, like these games. And it's like, I've been to some really nice house games too, where people are really nice and even then, like, I feel like in their own house, or when you lose a lot in those games, people play on credit. Like, let's say I win 4,000
mm-hmm.
and some guy loses a whole bunch, but I can't get paid yet because they don't have the money because this guy was on credit. So I got to wait. Then I get like 1,000 in 3 weeks, and then the kid's like, oh, I'll give you two. I get the money eventually, mm-hmm. but it's just a hassle, you know? Like, in the casino, if I sit down, and not that I want to hit and run, but if I'm up 2,400 in an hour and a half, and I got a girl who wants to hang out, or I want to, you know, go, I'm like, you know, I'm not feeling anymore, I won't feel bad getting up.
Right.
Uh-huh. You just can't do that in a house game. You can't. You won't get, one, you won't get invited back. Two, it's bad etiquette. Three, you look like an asshole. And it's like so many things going against you. Where a casino, like, who gives a damn? You know, nobody cares. You can do what you want and get up anytime you want. So the only thing I miss about the old days of poker is when I look down at aces or like ace king suited, I got like a, like so excited. I was like, oh my God. Just looking down like the queen jack of diamonds. You're like, how, oh, like you just look down at it like, wow. Like, I can't wait to see this flop or, you know, like this, or ace king of, you know, ace king of spades. You're like, it's so, you keep looking back at it because it looks so, it just blows up in your face. Now I look down at these hands. I look down, like, it's always fighting getting big hands still, but you look down at aces, you're like, all right, what's the best? Like, you start thinking about the strategy. This is like, right. you get aces all the time now. It's like, not all the time, but like, you've seen it a million times. So it's like looking down at like 7-6 of spades, the same shit. It's like just another hand. And like, how are we going to make the max, or, you know, if we're behind, what are we going to do? It's just like, just an everyday, you know, I'm still passionate about poker, but I miss the old days where like, it meant a lot more, like looking at these hands, you get so much more excited. You guys, it gets like, you know.
All right. Well, if you ever make it to Israel again, visit family or whatever it is, you come to our home game, we get excited even about Deuce 7 offsuit.
No, I'm going to come. I'll definitely come. Is the home game in the West Bank, man? I don't know if I want to, you know, go to the West Bank and play a home
we
game.
We have in other places as well. Okay. We'll be in touch about it.
I have to meet you in Tel Aviv or something, yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said before we started recording, you know, you're welcome anytime in Salt Lake City. It's right on the way to Denver, you know, if you're – well, it's not exactly on the way to Denver.
But it's about an hour and a half out of the way, yeah.
A little bit of a variance, or if you're going up to the Northwest or whatever. So, yeah, and we never play for stakes that you'd ever be up or down $4,000.
That's good. Right. I'm not looking to kill people. I'm like, yeah, if I can go to a home game where I'm, you know, losing or winning, you know, 200 to 600 bucks, that's great. You know, like, you know, it's all right. You know, I'm not looking
to cheap way to learn Badoosi, you know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you guys have a little Badoosi, like, you know, 5-10 limit game or even smaller. I'm okay with that, you know, whatever, 4-8 to 4, I mean, I'm in.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. Well, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to give us some of your time and some of your insight and experiences. It's been a great interview, and we thank you very much. Before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Well, sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast.
That was there you go. Yeah.
Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Number two, for the listeners who's trying to get into poker, and, you know, I get these questions all the time on Facebook and my messages like, hey, man, you know, I'm this. I have a family. Like, just don't quit your job and just get into the game. Try to, like, even with me, I started playing very little progressively. If you're, you know, if you see yourself winning, try to win, you know, stay at that limit and see if you can beat that game consistently. And then if you're making more money than you are at work, you know, I wouldn't quit then. I would still keep playing because, you know, you need a big size. If it's a big sample size of consistently beating the game on that level, and then, you know, you'll fall into it after a while. You know, you get used to the, you know, number two, don't let people borrow money. I don't care if it's $50. Okay? Don't let anybody borrow money. Nobody. I don't care if people change when it comes to money. No money, no borrowing of money. Number three, it's cool to watch these high limit players do all these crazy moves and float flops and check float out of position and raise and bluff raise rivers. But you have to be comfortable with making all these plays. And my biggest advice to a lot of beginning players is stay in your lane and be comfortable with the plays you are making. Be very confident about them. A lot of players can't mimic and can't emulate a lot of the things they see or try to do what they see because they just do it sporadically and do it with no They do it with no plan. They don't even know what they try to apply these things that they learn and they just crash because they're speeding and they have no idea what they're doing. They see it. They want to like, oh, I'm going to raise this river, but have reasons, you know, and just go slow. You know, you'll get there, you know, and it takes a while to be advanced. You can't just jump into it, you know, advanced Spanish. And if you're learning Spanish, you're going to start at the bottom. You know, you're going to learn a few sentences, and then you progressively get into, you know, and then you're all of a sudden 3 years later, you're taking advanced Spanish and you're speaking fluently. It's the same with anything, you know, with poker, it's the same way. So for all the beginners out there who want to learn poker, just take it slow, learn, play tight, learn the game, watch, listen, and stop wearing headphones at the table. If you really, if you really want to improve your game, listening to your favorite playlist in a tournament is fucking bullshit. Okay? Stop listening to all music. Listening to people talk, paying attention to hands when you're out of hands is the biggest thing about learning poker. Because when you're out of hands, there's no pressure and you can learn so much from looking at what people do and how people play certain hands, and your hand reading abilities jumps up to, it gets so much better. You know, like if you're listening to music, then you should not be playing poker. You should literally, you know, like until you get to that level where you're that good and okay, put in a song here once in a while. All right. If you get bored, if it helps you with your game when you get later in your career, great. But you're learning poker, you literally need to pay attention and start watching play. That's the biggest leak for like 98% of poker players. They don't pay attention when they're talking to other players when the other hands are going on. I do it myself. I'm guilty myself. But that's very important. So that's what I have to say to the beginning poker players out there. Hope that helps. Yeah.
That's great advice. And again, taking it from somebody that has got the credentials that knows what he's talking of. So that's great.
I'm self-made, guys. I don't have any other businesses. I'm not proud of this. You know, I'm not proud to say all I have is poker. I don't have a little, you know, I don't have real estate. I don't have any businesses. Everything you see, everything I have is from playing poker. I've never been broke. It's been 15 years. All my money's from playing cards. I don't have nothing to fall back on. I've never been staked. I never borrowed money. Everything's from me. Everything comes from me.
Straight talk from Ronnie Barda. You can find him, by the way, at Ronnie Barda, BARDAH on Twitter.
Yes, sir.
And we'll put some links in the show note, too, so people can learn more about you and get in touch if they want to. So, again, thanks for spending some time
Bruce,
with us.
Bruce, Robbie, thank you for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
Great to speak with you, sir.
One of our recent contest winners would like to challenge me to the title of the tightest player at the table.
It's hard to have a home poker game without playing cards, and there is a difference. Top Pair is proud to feature and recommend J-Design cards. Made of durable plastic, the right thickness for easy shuffling and dealing, plus a unique look with a pip placement, artistic backs, striking face cards, and a huge variety of colors. Give your home game players something to talk about by playing with the distinctive J-Design cards. Check the Top Pair homepage, toppair.net, for a link, or go to classicplayingcards.com and order yours today.
The heart and soul of poker has always been the fact that it's a social game.
Who doesn't remember sitting around the kitchen table with their buddies in high school, drinking soda, playing for nickels, dimes, and quarters?
Back before everyone had a computer in their pocket, do you remember how difficult it used to be to keep track of organizing your home game?
Now, running a home game with your friends is easier than ever before, using the new one-of-a-kind OOAK iOS poker app.
As a home game host, you'll love all the OOAK features that help you keep track of it all.
The one-of-a-kind app provides you with the number of chips of each denomination needed to create the desired starting stack, and it also keeps track of tournament blind levels.
Whether you are playing cash games or tournaments, this app will allow you to start your games effortlessly, cutting down on setup time and getting the action going as quickly as possible.
For more information, visit OOAK.poker and follow them on Twitter at OOAKpoker.
Be sure to download the one-of-a-kind poker app from the App Store today.
One outer. A humorous, peculiar, significant, or noteworthy story from the past poker home game.
Well, you know, Robbie, any of our longtime listeners to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast knows I've kind of got a reputation for being a nitty player, as, you know, sitting at the table knitting, as Ronnie would say. Playing very tight, just because I hate to lose, and so I hate to take undue chances, and even got to the point where my former co-host and still good friend Eric, when I play at his house, I don't know if any of you have ever played blackjack or 21 in the casino or the card room, but if you do something like you've got a 19 or a 20 and you ask to hit it, the dealer will yell out, "Hitting 19." Hitting 18, in other words, you know, drawing the pit boss's attention that, you know, I'm not just going to give him a card. He asked for it. Hitting 19, player hitting 18.
Right.
in that same vein, whenever I'm playing with Eric, and I make a raise, he'll say, "Calling Bruce." or I'll make a bet and he'll need to raise me and he'll call out, "Raising Bruce."
Yeah.
Of course, this is suicide, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Cute.
One of our winners last week, from Southern California, said, "Bruce, this might be good for a one outer." He says, "You play a tight game, but at our game, if I decide to play a hand, I will usually hear from someone at the table, 'We have a Gary sighting.'"
All the cards have been dealt for this episode of Top Pair. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and entertaining. Robbie and Bruce will be happy to have you join them for our next show. Just a reminder, we love your input. Contact us via email at feedback@toppair.net. Give us a follow on Twitter at Top Pair and like our Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast Facebook page. After all, we're not always right, just 99% of the time. For a more in-depth look at the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, including access to past episodes, topics to be covered in the future, and links to information mentioned in the show, log on to our website at toppair.net.